In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Energemetra 6 podcast. We are on episode 36. Today we are supposed to be tackling chapter 13 of The Veil of Mysteries. Looking forward to it. And we are, I guess we're all here. Thank you, Luke and Mel and second and third and all of our listeners. Appreciate everybody. Let's go ahead and hit the V for V ad and we can get going, I guess. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. All right. Before we dig in, I have about 2 more weeks left of this busy, go, going to different conferences and stuff. The last ones before I get a break are Iowa and Colorado. So the Iowa Homeschool Conference this coming weekend and Colorado next weekend. So any of you who might be in those areas, maybe get to see you there. And now this is The Veil of Mysteries. We're on chapter 13.
The Lightmaker didn't make people to fill up the universe. He made the universe for holding the people.
The Collected Wisdom of Siva Ratting.
From the Bridewell, it was a short walk to the Conclave. Nate was going on what Bradford had told him, hoping to find the adjutant there. Nate's initial flash of red-hot anger at Bradford's attitude toward the people of Solace had cooled as he blasted his way through the Bridewell. But seeing Ralph and the torture he'd been subjected to was enough to rekindle the flames. At the very least, the adjutant was responsible for creating a culture that made torture an acceptable punishment for minor crimes. At worst, well, Nate had an ugly suspicion that what he'd seen was just scratching the surface. As they entered the conclave, the booming voice of the speaker was audible even before they could see him.
And it is only proper that those with the gift of the fields follow the tenants and concern themselves with the welfare of those less powerful than they. Indeed, I myself have always made the utmost effort to see that those under my care are properly treated.
The speaker, obviously the adjutant by the elaborate robes of office he wore, turned to Nate's party, and his eyes narrowed.
Ah. Here comes the interloper now, a boy of no standing or stature.
Meanwhile, behind Nate, Laura gasped, and all of Nate's friends from the Milky Way stopped dead still, staring at the adjutant.
His eyes! Look at his eyes!
Laura was horrified. Ty stood on tiptoe to see the adjutant, then shook his head in bewilderment.
He has exact eyes. What's wrong?
Andrew's grim voice cut clearly through the babble of the crowd to either side of them.
It
It's one of them, Nate. He belongs to them.
Nate glanced back at Andrew and nodded curtly, then turned back to the adjutant who was winding down his declamation.
Interfering in the justice of the Telestry and of Solus. What have you to say for yourself, child?
Nate strode forward until he too stood at the podium, across from the adjutant. His voice was low, but he made sure it was loud enough to carry across the conclave. Adjutant Celedris, I've come from the Bridewell. I found a poor member of your population being tortured with Energemetra 6 there. I was told his torture was the punishment for minor crimes. The adjutant's reply was louder than Nate, obviously intended to overwhelm him.
That man was duly convicted of theft and sentenced. You have no right to question or interfere in Telestry justice.
Nate's voice was still low, but totally unwavering. And what of your registry? Driving your citizens to crime because they cannot find legitimate employment is the worst kind of stewardship.
Shame,
the adjutant replied,
is a fine motivator. It is only the most recalcitrant criminals who refuse to be corrected and go from the registry to the Bridewell.
Nate stared the adjutant down. Public shaming may have its place, but denying people the ability to work because of their shame just guarantees they will have nowhere else to turn except to thieving. The Telestry uses emulging only in the case of capital crimes, yet you use it to punish simple theft. Is there any person here who would not steal to feed his family if he couldn't find employment because an unjust governor disallowed him from working? The adjutant stared at him for a long moment. When he replied, it was obvious his contempt had gotten the better of him.
One of the many benefits of being adjutant is that I do not have to explain myself to rabble like you.
Then he lowered his voice, smirking at Nate.
Do you think you could escape so easily? I know what you are.
This time the shock was familiar. Nate wasn't paralyzed as he had been when Rebus spoke, though the adjutant's exact eyes bored into him just as Rebus's had. At those words, Nate instinctively reached out to grasp the fields. This time he could feel what the adjutant was doing, the same thing Elder Rebus had done to him at Sanctuary. It was almost as if the adjutant's gaze and his knowledge of Nate's other reality were all it took to draw that world into this one. It transformed him from Nate Brightstar, long-awaited hero and banisher of shades, into the broken thing he really was. Nate wasn't ready for it. There was no way to be ready for such an assault. But this time he wasn't caught completely unaware. His attention didn't shatter as it had before Rebus, and he was able to seize Energemetra 6, watching the enemy across from him grimly. The adjutant sneered, then lashed out with Energemetra 6. Though the attack took him somewhat by surprise, he had a firm hold on the fields, and he saw the blow coming. It was a substantial attack, a great club of gray energy that sped straight at him from across the podium. Nate didn't try to dodge it. Instead, he absorbed the blow with a shield of his own power. Without the sigil, the attack would have been significant, even difficult for him to handle. But with the sigil's amplification bearing him up, it was so trivial to dissipate that he doubted he was even dumping much extropy into the ground below, which was the only place it had to go presently, though his poor shoes might take a beating. The adjutant smiled then and spoke again, for Nate's ears only.
Witless.
The words struck Nate like a body blow, shattering his hold on Energemetra 6. He shuddered and his vision flashed back to that moment in that other life before. His mind played back every nuance of Adrian's tone as she'd turned to leave him collapsed on his bed, head aching. It didn't take long for Nate's vision to clear, but he still felt utterly confused. Nate was staring at the adjutant, fighting to regather himself, when the figure across from him collapsed like a puppet whose strings had been cut. Faintly, through his confusion, Nate sensed a retreating presence. It was as if time itself stopped for a frozen heartbeat. In the crowd across from him and behind the adjutant, he saw a flash of a face, its exact eyes staring straight at him. It was only a glimpse, but it burned into his memory. Where had he seen that boy before? He was young, barely older than Nate himself. A flash of glittering crystal caught Nate's eye from the boy's neck, but there wasn't time. Nate was recalled to himself as the crowd's buzz cut off in a bare instant. There were cheers here and there in the auditorium, but most of the crowd was too stunned to make any noise at all. Nate stared around, desperately struggling to gather himself. Before he could even begin to figure out what to say, though, the same Telestic who had been present to see Nate's address to the conclave earlier slowly rose to his feet. He nodded to Nate, then bowed his head to think, before speaking for the entire crowd to hear.
All of Solas owes you a debt. You see, I have here an order from the Telestry authorizing the removal of Adjutant Celedris. What I lacked was the ability to control him. He is to be returned to the Telestry to stand trial for his crimes. I believe there was even to be a team sent to retrieve him, but they've yet to present themselves, and the adjutant was a powerful man. He was well beyond my own ability to overpower. Did you kill him? Perhaps as well for all of us if you did.
Nate shook his head. I didn't kill him. I don't know how long he'll be unconscious. Before he could finish, the adjutant stirred and moaned, then struggled to his feet, head whipping around. A collective gasp rose in the conclave, and Nate saw the other Telestic's eyes widening. Then the adjutant screamed.
It's gone!
In the aftermath of that scream, the entire conclave was silent, and the adjutant screamed again.
What have you done? The fields, they're gone!
Nate frowned, and, ignoring the adjutant except to motion to him offhandedly, he said, I don't know how long that will last, either. Are you taking charge of him? The Telestic's eyes were wide, and he nodded faintly, then motioned to the two guards who had approached from their positions near the conclave's entrance. As they led the adjutant away, Nate faced the Telestic, who was apparently Solas's new leader. The crowd was cheering now, yelling madly as the reality of the situation sank in. It lasted for a long time, but Nate eventually raised his hand for quiet. Slowly, the crowd complied. When the cheering had died down enough that he could be heard above it, Nate said, As I told you, what just happened was not my doing. Regardless, I think for the time being you'd best suspend emulsions. The people of Solas have had enough of such torture. This was followed by a renewed cheer from the crowd. Then it was the Telestic's turn to raise his own hand. The Telestic nodded to Nate in return.
I believe some changes to the adjutant's registry are in order as well.
He looked around at the crowd.
You were right. Public shame may have its place, but Celedris used it as a means of oppression. Leadership should look to the future instead of shackling us to the past. Celedris will be returned to the Telestry, along with witnesses for his trial.
The Telestic eyed the crowd thoughtfully, then said,
Solas owes you a debt, young man. You are welcome here any time you wish.
The other man stepped forward to grasp Nate's hand. This signaled the end of the show, as far as the Telestic was concerned, and the crowd took to their feet, cheering. Nate returned the handclasp, and after a moment's hesitation, followed the Telestic off the podium and back through the cluster of his friends, who were standing just off the podium on the entry walk. When they were safely away from the podium, with the crowds cheering a dull roar behind them, the Telestic turned to Nate.
I am Tetson Arsondas. I meant what I said about Solas owing you a debt. Whatever you have need of, we will be happy to assist you.
Nate smiled crookedly up at Arsondas. I meant what I said also. Whatever you think I may have done to Adjutant Celedris, I didn't. I'm not sure who did, but it wasn't me. I'm not even sure what they did. Arsandas looked startled.
That hardly seems possible.
Nate snorted. Well, I won't take credit for something that wasn't my doing. And on another note, his crooked smile turned a bit sheepish. You'll find I left the Bridewell less than whole. Arsandas' eyebrows rose in surprise.
Oh, well.
He seemed at a loss for words. He simply stood there for long enough that Nate almost laughed. Then Arsandas laughed himself and shrugged.
I'm sure that will be part of the legend.
His smile turned into something closer to a grin.
You know, whatever you might say about it, no one else who watched what happened in that conclave will believe it wasn't your doing.
Nate nodded ruefully and glanced back at his friends. You're probably right, except maybe them. Arsandas nodded back.
How long are you planning on staying here? Celedris had powerful friends. I will try, but I doubt I can protect you from them.
His own expression turned rueful, and he added,
I'm going to have problems enough of my own, I suspect.
Nate smiled wryly. You may at that. I'm not sure how long we'll be staying. I have a friend I promised to talk to, at least. And there's one other thing, too. Arsandas raised an eyebrow.
Well, whatever your plans, I shall do my best to accommodate you. For now, though, I must bid you good day.
After returning Arsandas' goodbye, Nate made his way back to Adamant, his friends still trailing behind. When they entered the spaceport, Kievan dropped back to walk beside him.
The Telestry's at it again, eh? Loradin can reach us even here.
Nate sent Kievan an even stare, not denying what he said, but not confirming it either. Truth be told, he was still processing everything that had happened, and Kievan's insistent reminder of Loradin was just another piece of the puzzle that Nate was struggling to assemble. Rachel, too, dropped back to walk beside them.
It might be Loradin, this time at least.
She looked over at Nate thoughtfully.
He is the head of the Telestry now.
Nate shrugged uncomfortably, remembering what Celedris had said. Nate remembered clearly his last meeting with Loradin, when his pupils elongated to become exsect, as if he were some other being entirely. Did Loradin know who Nate was? Did he know about Nate's life before? It would explain a great deal, but for him to be responsible for everything, Nate just wasn't certain. Jesse gave Kievan a dubious look, and Kievan turned, obviously ready to argue the point. Nate dropped even further back, giving himself a little space. Rachel followed. For a few minutes, they walked quietly, side by side. Then Rachel's lips twisted wryly.
I see it now,
she said. Oh? See what? Nate asked, tiredly.
You're the only one who could have set this place right,
Rachel said.
You are here for a reason.
Nate nodded. We're hardly started. There's so much that needs to change. So much to be done. Rachel looked at him, her expression still troubled.
How do I live with it, Nate? He left, but he's not gone. I know he's out there somewhere.
Nate stopped walking and faced her directly. Rach, he said. There will come a time when I can give you an answer to that, but not yet. For now, trust me. I need you here. I need you all. Rachel nodded slowly and gave him a brief hug, then turned to follow the rest of the group toward Adamant. As they were walking up the boarding ramp, Rachel grinned back over her shoulder mischievously at Nate.
You know,
she said,
you don't have to try to make up for 1,000 years of boredom all at once.
It was a full 2 days before Lyssa returned to Adamant. After the first day went by with no sign of her, Nate wasn't sure whether she would come at all. Especially knowing how difficult it had been for her in the first place, he began to doubt she'd show up. But when he left Adamant to go to the conclave on the second day, there she was. When he walked out of the ship, she was standing at the bottom of the ramp, looking uncertain. Nate smiled when he saw her. Lyssa, I'm glad you came.
I owe ya. I ain't never welched on a debt.
Lyssa's voice was full of trepidation, and she looked down after she spoke.
Ain't got nothing to offer in payment, neither.
Nate looked at her thoughtfully, then said, I came to Solace because I dreamed someone was doing to me what they did to your friend Ralph. You don't owe me anything, Lyssa. I didn't ask you to come because I want repayment. A look of surprise crossed Lyssa's face, and she scowled.
What then?
Nate gazed at her intently. How old are you? Lyssa looked shocked now, as if Nate had guessed a secret, then grew suspicious.
Why are you asking?
Nate barked a laugh. You carry off the scared kid act pretty well. But I'm not blind. Every one of my friends on Adamant is an odd. Lyssa's shocked look turned to profound discomfort.
Yeah, why you think I keep my head down, eh? Gammon like me. We come to bad ends if people find out.
Gammon? Nate frowned. You're not so different from me, you know. Nate was looking directly at her, his expression gentle. So we're not normal. Every person's unique. We're just more different than most people are comfortable with. It was Lyssa's turn to snort.
You're right there for sure.
Do you have dreams about a world in chains? Nate's expression when he asked was almost intense enough to make Lyssa shy away. But she nodded slowly.
Aye, that I do.
And can you use E6? She snorted again.
Oh, I've tried a few times. Maybe I could. I'm afraid I'd hurt someone.
She shifted uncomfortably.
I did hurt someone.
She looked pained. Then the expression disappeared, and she looked up at Nate, suspicious again.
Why you wanna know?
Because I want you to follow me, Nate said. The enemy is coming, and there's not enough time to prepare. Lyssa laughed incredulously.
Me? Go out there and fight what? The monsters in me dreams? On the Tauber planet? You're joking. I'm just a little street bird.
Nate smiled. You care enough about your friends to come beg a total stranger for help saving them when you have nothing to offer in return. That's good enough for me. Lyssa actually looked thoughtful now, but after a moment she shook her head.
Too many relying on me. I help people. If I leave, they die, some of them.
Nate put his hand in his pocket, pulling out the remaining amulets. He took the soft purple one and held it out in one hand. Lyssa looked at it, her eyes widening, then looked at the sigil, glowing where it hung around Nate's neck. She asked,
Is that...
Nate nodded, and Lyssa's eyes widened further. She reached out to touch the purple stone, and Nate smiled crookedly at her, then clasped her hand with his, the amulet between their palms. He could feel Energemetra 6 flowing through the amulet into him. And though Lyssa hadn't imprinted the great schemic, she could obviously feel it too. She was staring, wide-eyed. Nate smiled at her. What do you say? Lyssa was silent. Then, withdrawing her hand from Nate's, she asked,
How long do I have to decide?
Nate shook his head. I told you it was a dream that brought me here. There's one more thing that hasn't happened yet. He reflexively glanced at the sky, then smiled ruefully. Not sure what it is, but it should be at least a few days. Then Nate frowned and asked, Lyssa, when you first came to me, you said that you'd already lost too many friends. What did you mean? Lyssa scowled and looked down.
People disappearing. Friends I've had for years. Just gone.
Lyssa was cut off by a siren so loud that she and Nate both clamped their hands over their ears.
The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And that ends chapter 13 of The Veil of Mysteries and part 2. And next week we will pick up with part 3, Invasion. Thank you everybody for being here. Thank you, Mel. Thank you, Luke. Thank you, second and third. And to all of our listeners, appreciate you all. We will catch you all next time.